Hey, welcome back to Corinth in Your Car, I believe episode 27, yeah? I think?
Sounds right.
Episode 27. Welcome back. Hey, I'm here. I'm Josh. Luke is back. He is over the weather. Since last week, he was under the weather.
Yeah.
So he's over.
Whatever that means.
Over the weather, over the hump, over the weekend, which was very, very, very full for you, Luke. And Adam is here as well. So we're excited to be back. Hey, we're excited after the weekend too. I know you guys are. I'm sure you stayed up really late on Sunday night, and probably after the game was over,
What happened Sunday night?
There was a really popular halftime performance at something, but I was caring about more what happened before and after that.
I was watching Columbo.
Columbo. Sunday night. I don't think you were.
No, we have actually started watching Columbo, though.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Didn't Chuck Norris, Texas Ranger, used to be on Sunday nights?
Not a clue.
I don't know. I used to watch that growing up and was amazed how he could beat 10 people with guns with just roundhouse kicks. But anyway.
The only reason I know anything about that show is because of a movie with Will Ferrell where he is saying the blessing before food and he thanks the Lord for his two sons, Walker and Texas Ranger.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
Sunday night Super Bowl, you guys are excited. Two times out of 4 years, that's great. Chiefs are the champions, so congrats.
In the words of football theologian Mitch Holthus, you can doubt the Chiefs and dislike the Chiefs and disrespect the Chiefs, but you're eventually going to have to deal with the Chiefs.
Well, there you go. He could be a preacher that writes a sermon.
Yeah.
You know, nice alliteration.
There's alliteration and everything, and man, it was good. Exciting.
Yeah, cool. And so you,
I did stay up late.
You probably already ordered your championship gear, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
Cool. Has not shipped yet.
In a long time.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So it's officially the postseason of NFL football for every team. So what's next? What are you excited about this spring? What sports, you know, are next to watch and get excited about?
I've always been a big Spurs fan, but there's not much to be excited about in that world right now.
Aren't they on a pretty big losing streak right
they
now?
They are the worst team in the NBA.
Oh, man.
That's kind of been like a long time coming with the retirements of Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili, with the fallout that happened with Kawhi Leonard, and all that sort of stuff. So we, unlike the Chiefs, where when the Chiefs rebuild, they win the Super Bowl. The Spurs, if they rebuild, it's going to take some time. So hopefully we got to get a nice little draft pick coming in at the end of this regular season. So there's basketball going on. March Madness is coming up. I'll probably watch some of that. And then I know that my wife is probably pretty excited that spring training is just around the corner for MLB.
Yeah.
And so I'll probably watch some of the Atlanta Braves with her. There's always something. Always something. The Masters is coming up too.
Yeah, no, that'll
I'm
be good.
About that one.
That'll be good.
That's about the only golf tournament that I like watch from start to finish.
Yeah.
I'll have some other golf like on in the background, but that's about the only one I'll watch from start to finish. Of course, disc golf.
And we're close to the Masters now. All of us didn't grow up here, but we're close. And so have you ever been, Adam?
Oh, no. No. Yeah. No,
so that would be like, I'm not a huge golf fan, but I appreciate sports and what the Masters is for golf, and I think it'd be super fun to be there sometime.
Yeah.
Like it'd be
cool. You've got to enter your name in a lottery.
It's like 20 years away or something. It's crazy.
Yeah,
yeah.
Something
you won't
like
even know the golfers you're watching by the time. But it's crazy. I think the Masters in 2019, which was like a month or two before I came out here full time, was the year that Tiger like came back and won.
Yeah,
that was like. That's like one of the biggest sports moments of all time, and it just happened at a little golf tournament.
I think his first win was at the Masters when he was like 21 or something, right?
I'm not sure.
That's his first.
I know he won a lot.
Adam, what are you excited about this spring in the sports world?
Yeah, so NFL draft is coming up.
Where is it going to be?
Going to be in Kansas City.
Kansas City, baby. Let's go.
And then after that is rookie minicamp, and then after that it are OTAs, then training camp. So,
So you're just continuing the Chiefs because that's who's good.
Yeah.
You want to follow that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I'll pay attention to what the Royals are doing and that stuff in baseball. But yeah, for the most part, it's just it's kind of a bit of a dry sports season.
It's a sabbatical.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's going on Chiefs sabbatical.
I like, you know, you said March Madness a while ago. I think that's a lot of fun, seeing the college teams, all 64, however big the tournament is. I think 64, or do they expand it?
It's 60.
So like 68 or something?
Yeah.
It's not good basketball anymore.
It's wild. The first weekend is probably the most exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
March Madness.
Well, I think, you know, we all love sports. We all love winning. We've talked about that a lot just through the past couple of weeks with this series, how to win. And here we are. It's week three. Sunday was how to win with God. And so we're excited to jump in just to that sort of conversation from the sermon. So Adam, why don't you recap just kind of where were we this past week with winning, how to win with God. Just give us a brief overview there.
Yeah. So we start off with just the idea of what does it even mean to win with God? And what comes to mind with that? And probably since it's fairly original to us all the way back from the beginning of our creation. And I think a lot of times we think winning with God and we equate that with boring our life down just to be, you know, missing out on all kinds of things. But that God actually does have something in store for us, and that, you know, the basic way, this is probably one of the more simple messages that is there, because it just truly is. Jesus already gave us the answer of, well, if you really want to win, then you love God and you love others. And so just trying to put some legs to that. And hopefully it was not necessarily new information, but it was a good reminder of what we've probably all been taught since we were knee-high to a grasshopper. And so just wee little lads.
You know. Knee-high to a grasshopper.
You've never heard that
phrase? I have never heard in my life.
You're hearing it for the first time right now.
In real time.
Wow.
High to a grasshopper. Just the way of saying we were small or short.
Yeah. Yeah, we were whenever we were tiny. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It reminds me of that Bible joke, you know, who's the shortest person in the Bible?
Not Zacchaeus. It's
Nehemiah.
Nehemiah. Yeah. Nehemiah. Or there's another one, who was the shoe height? They were as high as a shoe.
Yeah. Was it Nathaniel or?
I can't remember. Yeah. So Luke, to get back on track, I guess. No, it's funny. To talk about the sermon, what stuck out to you as you read through stuff and what stuck out, you know?
I was sharing with you, Josh, before we hit record, probably the thing that I noticed first, and it's that for Adam, starting off this series, How to Win at Work, and then coming into today with this topic, How to Win with God, I think it's interesting that he ended up at creation both times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're telling the narrative of the way that God originally designed things to be.
Mm-hmm.
And in all reality, like we actually started losing whenever we rejected God's creation the way that he designed it to be.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like this phrase, you know, sometimes we feel like, well, God just wants something from me, or he doesn't want me to have any fun, or, you know, all that sort of stuff. No. God wants something for you. And the way in his grace and love he designed everything to be originally proves that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like God created the universe for you to experience wins. Of course, the ultimate win being a thriving and amazing relationship with him. And whenever we reject that, that's whenever we start to just take fat L's all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it's how do we win with God? Well, do whatever we can to get back into the way that he originally created things to be. So I just think that was interesting. I don't think you said much about that from stage, but you just ended up in the creation narrative again with this whole idea of like talking about how to win, which just shows the character of God's grace to say, man, when he created us, he created us with that intent.
Yeah. And I think that, and that isn't really a connection that I had made until you pointed that out. And so I do find that really interesting as well, but it logically makes all kinds of sense that whenever God creates the world and everything's good, it's good, it's good, it's very good. And so we could just call that we were winning.
Right. Yeah.
But whenever sin enters the world, that's where the losses begin to pile up.
Yep.
And it's all kinds of losses. It's the loss of ease. It's the loss of relationship. It's the loss of innocence. It's, I mean, you just start, they pile up real mm-hmm. quick. So I thought that yeah. was a great insight, Luke.
Yeah, you're either sinning or winning, right?
Ooh.
Oh, there you go.
There's the rhyme.
There we go.
Nice job, Josh.
Yeah, there
nice
you go.
Job.
Just thought of that now.
Somebody text Matt Proctor.
I am trademarking it. Not really, but no, I love that. You know, and Luke, yeah, we were talking just before this started here how interesting that is that God really did set us up to win. However, the tension for us, Adam, you brought this out. There is a big tension that so many of us, even Christians, mm-hmm. but just the world at large, just kind of have this question in the back of our head, do I go after God and live a miserable life? Mm-hmm. 'Cause he's probably going to send me to Africa as a missionary or whatever that mm-hmm. is. Or do I go after enjoyment and have some fun? So yeah. play with that just for a little bit. How do you see that being worked out in people's lives? Does that question make sense? Just yeah. what do we think God is holding out on us? Because you said that too, like God, the serpent tempted Eve and said, God's holding out on you. So what do we modern day look at and say, God's holding out on me. I can't do that. And I can't do this.
Well, I think that there is this idea that if I'm going to follow God, if I'm going to follow Jesus, if I'm going to win with him, to use our vocabulary there, then it does mean I'm never going to get to have any fun. I will never get to delight in anything. You know, the whole idea of, and I think, I don't know if you guys ever experienced this, but I know that I did. Like, I remember the fear of like, oh man, if I surrender everything to God, then that means, you know, he could send me to Timbuktu and I'm going to go live with the pygmies and, yeah. you know, never be able to do, you know, X, Y, Z and those kind of things. And I was listening to a guy who was talking about this. And he said that he actually verbalized that fear to one of his like Bible college seminary professors. Mm-hmm. He's like, I just don't know, man. I'm just afraid that God would want me to go to Africa and I really don't want to do that and yada, yada, yada. And the professor said, well, here's kind of how I think. I don't think God would punish the African people with somebody like you.
That's a great point.
You know,
I like that.
Who has no desire at all, you know, to go do that.
Right.
And so he was like, that was actually really, really, really helpful, mm-hmm. you know, for him to be able to think through that. But, you know, anyway, it's just this idea that we're just going to be in this like monastery type life to where we just don't experience any kind of joy and it completely ignores. I can't remember which psalm it is. I think I read it this week. Maybe it was last week. But, you know, delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. And that's Adam's paraphrase. But, you know, this idea that there is, like, there are commands that, you know, we delight and find joy and all these things. So it just doesn't logically make sense, but that's why it's a lie.
Yeah. And there's certainly, you know, you have Jesus himself saying, if you want to come after me, you
absolutely
must deny yourself, take up your cross and follow me. So there is that call, but I think it's, you know, a misunderstanding of the call that would say Jesus just wants us to be miserable.
Yeah,
because he knows us better than we even know ourselves. So what he's saying isn't deny like the best parts of you, the true calling inside of you, deny your flesh, deny what's actually going to hurt you,
mm-hmm.
you know? One preacher had kind of said it this way before, if you're not having fun while you're sinning, you're doing it wrong.
Right.
You know? So there is a level of fun or pleasure or whatever when there's sin there, but that's very short-lived.
Right.
It's front-sided and it's on the backside. It's filled with so much regret and pain, you know? And so there's that tension to manage as well. Luke, what else are you thinking right now?
Yeah, I'm trying to think through just my own life, my own memories. And, I've grown up in the church, been familiar with Jesus my whole life. And there were some seasons there kind of in late high school where I kind of did reject and go do my own thing to try that out just a little bit. And comparing that to the times where I'm walking the walk well and living in Christian community, guys, that's way more fun than anything else. Like mm-hmm. just to me, like some of my most incredible memories, some of the times that I laughed the hardest, some of the most fun that I've ever had was in moments and in circles and in seasons whenever I was actually walking with God and aligned in the center of his will mm-hmm. rather than, you know, saying, well, I don't know if I am ready to surrender myself fully to God because that means I've got to give up X, Y, and Z, or mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm ready to surrender myself to God because I'm scared of what he might ask me to do or anything like that. It's just thinking about my own life. Like I had way more fun in college playing Ultimate Frisbee at 10 o'clock at night with other Christians and then praying together after we were done than I would have had going to a club, right, you know, or anything right. like that. Like that was way more fun and way more wholesome and way more healthy for me. And I just like, for me, like that phrase, well, I feel like God might be holding out on me, or I feel like if I really surrender myself to Jesus, then I'm not going to have any fun. I can't even comprehend what that looks like for me. I know other people mm-hmm. probably could. But for me, I can't comprehend what that looks like because the most fun I've ever had is doing mm-hmm. life the Christian way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one reason is, and this isn't the only reason, but I think one reason is because, you know, like that quote says, if you're not having fun sinning, you're doing it wrong. I mean, there is some truth in that, but that's not the best life for you because sure, it's right. falling short so far. And it reminded me this C.S. Lewis quote. He says, we are half-hearted creatures, fooling around with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered. And I love this picture. He says, we are like an ignorant child who wants to make mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by an offer of a holiday at the sea. We are far too easily pleased. And I think that gets at the heart of the issue. Like we want to do something because it looks so good, but God says, I have something better.
Yeah.
That's how to win with God, is to trust him to his better life. And so, Adam, you got to quote Jack Black and Nacho Libre.
That's right.
How many sermons do you get to do that?
Not enough.
not enough. Yeah, yeah. Where he said, you know, you have to choose between a boring monastery or the joy of the, how do you pronounce that, Luca?
Lucha Libre.
Wrestling. Okay. Yeah. And so, obviously, we would insert whatever the, you know, attraction is for us. We have to choose between God or whatever. But I mean, God has something better.
It's not Lucha Libre for you.
That's pretty safe to say. Yeah. Or any kind of wrestling. Cause the one time I did try to wrestle somebody in college, he put me in a headlock and put a pressure point on the back of my neck and I blacked out in 3 seconds.
Yep.
Yeah. You never mess with an amateur wrestler.
No.
Dude that's got cauliflower ear. Just walk away.
Yeah.
No,
just walk
man.
Away. Say yes, sir.
So Adam, you started out in the sermon with Genesis 3. We kind of talked about that. So talk to us a little bit just about, as you were reading and studying this week, preparing, what are some things that stuck out to you from Genesis 3? Maybe some insights you never saw before, or just some reminders that we need to hear from this story, Adam and Eve, the serpent, God's plan for us, that yeah. sort of stuff.
Now, I think one of the things that always stands out to me is a lot of times I feel like one of the reasons why people feel like that God is not about joy and experiencing fulfillment is they just think that like he's this like big rule maker and you know you got to do yeah. all these things mm-hmm. and I always just like to try to point out it's like you know whenever God created everything and everything was perfect he only had one rule
mm-hmm.
that's yeah. it.
Yeah,
that's it. Just one. Just one. He didn't want like this huge long list of commandments that people had to follow or anything like that. And he's just like, hey, there's this one tree over here. Just leave it alone. Okay, don't eat from that one. Just.
Hey, would you do me a favor?
Just do me a yeah.
do me a solid. And,
yeah. You've anyway. Got this. You've got everything else in the world that you need. Just leave that one thing alone. And it wasn't like just this. Out of the blue kind of thing. There's a purpose behind it. You know, it's because God wanted us to have a choice to be able to say that I will choose you, God, over anything else in this life. And so you've got to have that kind of tension there. But I just think that's fascinating to me is it's just like that's the only thing he had in store. And so it's not that he just like creates a bunch of rules that we've got to check off and all these other things. That was never his intention or his heart. It's after the fall. It's after sin. That's when all the rules, that's whenever all the things came into place, because God was trying to essentially mitigate the disaster that sin was in our world. So that's always been one of the things to me. The other thing that always pops out there too is just the way that the serpent just, you know, did God really say, you know,
just twists the truth,
man.
Yeah.
And he still does that today. And it doesn't take long scrolling through your Twitter feed or whatever it is to just find that's still that just little twist is still there. You know, did God really say that, you know, this type of sexuality is off bounds? You know, did God really say that you've got to do this with your money? Did God really say, you know, those kind of things? So,
yeah, that's what you pointed out was, we don't want God telling us what to do.
Yeah.
And the areas are kind of like age old areas,
yep.
But they're the same ones, you know, sexuality, money, time, behaviors.
Yeah.
Because we're convinced our way is the best way, or it's going to be the most fun way, or whatever. So
I think God's holding out.
Yeah. God's holding out. Like he, for some reason, is just trying to steal our fun. Like
who is he to say that, you know, that I need to live off 90% of my income? I mean, can you imagine how much more I would be able to do and how much more fun I would have?
There's a, so this just came up last night. You guys remember the movie Bruce Almighty?
Yeah.
Right. And so you have Morgan Freeman is the God character, right? And so he gets to, like, Bruce gets to play God for a while. And there was a scene where I think it was like email, like God got emails, right? And he was just overwhelmed. Bruce was about, like, how do you answer all these? And he just said, select all and clicked yes.
Yep.
And then mass chaos broke out because he said yes to everything. And the truth is, a loving father never says yes to everything that a demanding child wants.
Yeah, he's always going to weigh what's
best. Let's not even say this, not even a demanding child, just a child who truly thinks their way is best. I mean, I've said it before, I'm raising younger kids. And so there's lots of times where the beginning of the disciplinary conversation is just a simple question, do you trust me? And then we go into what's going to need to happen on the backside of that. So, Luke, what do you think about Genesis 3? What sticks out to you from that passage?
Yeah, I think Adam's insight from whenever he started talking about this was just that when God set it all up, there was just that one rule. And the rule really is, you know, just, hey, stay away from this tree. Don't worry about that. Don't touch it. Don't eat from it. But really what is behind that rule is God's heart to say, I love you so much, I want you to choose.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you break that down, Adam and Eve, where they went wrong was they chose themselves over God.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, eventually, you know, we get to this point where that is really what it comes down to today for us too, is it's, we've got a choice to make. And it's, are we going to choose God or are we going to choose something other than him? And really anything that we'd choose other than God is because we are trying to make ourselves, you know, the Lord of our life or the master of our life. And that just like kind of sets us up for failure because we don't know what's best for us in the long run. God, the creator and the sustainer of the universe, does. So my mind, and we'll see if I can get this full circle back, but my mind is on Jonah right now because that's what we're talking about in the teen room. Mm-hmm. And I hate Jonah. Jonah is the worst character in scripture. Like, oh my goodness. Yeah. Apart from the serpent in Genesis 3, like Jonah's right there next to him, you know? And of course, you know, he was a prophet, you know, a holy man, all that sort of stuff. But just over and over and over again throughout his story, you just see just him choose his own way over God's way and his own heart over God's heart.
Mm-hmm.
And you break that story down. And this is what I told the teenagers. And last night, this is what I've been telling myself all week. Jonah is the worst. And I'm a little bit more like Jonah than I want to admit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's this whole like Genesis chapter 1, the word of the Lord comes to Jonah, the son of Amittai, Jonah chapter 1, verse 2, go to Nineveh. Mm-hmm. The people that you just watched destroy 10 of the 12 tribes of Israel, I want you to go to them and preach to them. And Jonah says, no, 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 that's not the way that I envisioned my life going.
Mm-hmm.
I'm supposed to be a prophet who blesses the people of Israel, not a prophet who goes to the enemies of Israel. And yeah. So because he doesn't trust that God's plan is better than his plan, he runs as far west as he can run.
Yep.
And I told students, I was like, you may run as far west as you can run. You also might stay exactly where you're at. Either way, both of them are a step in the wrong direction whenever you're trying to live in alignment with God's will and what he calls you to do. All of this to say, God is the creator and the sustainer of the universe. What he says goes, and his plan is better than my plan.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever he calls me to do something, even if it makes me uncomfortable, it comes down to the same choice that Adam and Eve made in the garden is, am I going to choose him or am I going to choose myself?
Mm-hmm.
And understanding that on the other side of choosing him will be an experience of more joy and of more laughter and of more happiness and of more fulfillment than anything that I could ever achieve on my own with my own plan. And that's just kind of what's on my mind is that we think sometimes my plan is better than God's plan, and so I'm going to do it my way. But that we always end up letting ourselves down that way anyway.
Yeah.
God's plan is always better. Always gets more joy and fulfillment out of that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. We started in Genesis just like 2 weeks ago. It's almost like God knew what he was doing, right?
Crazy.
At the beginning of time, he knew if we want to win, when it comes to the idea of work, and then skipping ahead this week, you know, win just with God himself. He knew what he was doing in the beginning. And so I also found it interesting, Adam, you went to Mark chapter 12 just for some application sort of talk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily the beginning of Jesus' teaching, but it's kind of like the beginning of his teaching because he boiled down all the commandments and basically just said, if you want to know what all the law says, all mm-hmm. 613 laws boiled down into two sentences, two phrases, it's just love. God and then love others. Like, let's not make it too complicated. It's simple. Just what does love require of me?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's for God or whether it's for others. So, flesh that out just a little bit. You know, we kind of know why you went to Genesis 3, but what are some of the reasons you went to Mark 12 for the application
there? Yeah. Well, and we could have gone to Luke 10 or Matthew 22 mm-hmm. as well. And I think the reason this one fits so well is because it is somebody coming to Jesus and just basically asking the question, how do I win?
That's true, yeah.
You know, because it's which of these commandments is the greatest? In other words, what they're freely admitting is, so in the Old Testament, you know, the Pharisees kind of counted up 613 commands. And they're like, we understand nobody's going to be able to keep all 613 of these. And so
much less 10.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and so we're not going to be able to win when it comes to this. So help me understand, if I want to win, what do I need to do? Boil it all down for me. And so Jesus gives the, you call it the formula, but it's just those two greatest commandments of here's how you win with God. And you love him with everything that you have, your entire whole life. And then it's almost like, and I'll give you the bonus one as well, because you asked for one, but I'm giving you two.
The bonus question on the test, yeah.
Yeah, it's, but wait, there's more, mm-hmm. you know, and
if you call right now.
Yeah, if you call right now, I'll throw in this. It's, you need to love your neighbor as yourself. And so that really just, it boils everything down. And I think it's really interesting. So God begins the world with one command. You know, don't do this. Sin screws it all up. And so it's like, okay, now we got all these. But whenever Jesus is, you know, inaugurating, launching his kingdom, he's like, let me just get it down to two.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you can't keep 613. You can't even keep 10.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you two. And I think if we're all honest, it's like, and we still struggle with.
Yeah.
Yep.
With yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So you used an illustration as well about a vaccine.
Yeah.
And so flesh that out, just remind us a little bit. That was kind of a fun idea to think through and really convicting idea if you think about it in the right way. So
Yeah. It's just, you know, you think about, like, you know, typically the way vaccines work is they inoculate you with like a little bit of the disease, just enough of it, just a tiny amount so that your body can kind of get used to being able to fight it off. And that's how you become immune to it. And my fear is for our homes, for our lives as individuals, is that sometimes we just kind of expose ourselves to the things of God. And what ends up happening is because we're just like going a little bit of, we're like one toe in, kind of thing, we actually end up inoculating ourselves against the true experience that God wants us to have. And so I think that's what Jesus is warning us against, is not just this idea of, I'll take a little bit of God on the side, you know, give me him for an hour and a half on Sunday mornings, but then give me the other, would it be 166 and a half hours of the week,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Give me that. And I think there's a little bit of a warning in the command of this is the path. And if you don't choose this path, then there's a danger for you, mm-hmm, of getting to this place to where, as Isaiah said, you're somebody who's honoring God with your lips, but your heart, mm-hmm, is far. A person like Jonah, who is receiving a word from the Lord and goes literally as far west to the ends of the earth as he possibly can.
Right.
And I like what you said just a second ago, Luke. You know, it's like, you don't have to leave and go a physical distance away from God. Your heart can be the thing that goes all the way, you know, to the ends of the earth, away, and you never change your geographical location. So that's why the question is for us. It's like, so are you all in? Is it heart, soul, strength, mind? Is it every part of your being? And every single one of us would answer, I want to be that way. I think that's what we would all answer. You know, I want to be there. That's what I'm striving for. That's where I'm going.
Or at least I want to be there.
I want to want to be there.
Yeah. If we're honest, sometimes we don't want it, but we want to want it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's a part of the lifelong discipleship process of just continuing to be. And this is why we say all the time, you know, how do you win in the end is to be more in love with Jesus at the end than you were at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And that's that daily pursuit. That is that weekly pursuit, monthly pursuit, yearly pursuit, and just adding on wins as we go through through our life with him.
You kind of talked through loving God with your heart, your resources, and your rhythms.
Mm-hmm.
Luke, as you think about just kind of resources, your money, possessions, things like that, who was really good at managing resources back to God and using their kind of, you know, time, money, resources to do ministry with? Who jumps out to you?
Yeah, I think I was fortunate, like I said earlier, and grew up knowing about Jesus. And so for a lot of these types of questions, the first couple that come into mind are our parents.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they modeled and demonstrated their faith on a regular basis, even whenever life circumstances got hard. Nothing about our schedule, nothing about, you know, the way that we used resources in regards to blessing the church and blessing others ever changed. And, mm-hmm, you know, it could have been crazy busy or money could have been a little bit tight, but because they were convinced and convicted that they're supposed to love God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength, they did that and modeled it for us really, really well. And so really, really grateful for them. I think, really just thinking about resources. It's time and money.
Yeah.
Both, mm-hmm, of them. And,
yep.
I think that, you know, I heard someone say pretty recently, it's like, if you show me, your bank account,
yep,
your bank statements and your calendar,
mm-hmm,
I can show you what you value more than God.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about that. I was like, oh no, I'm going to not let anybody see my bank account or my calendar, because it's really true. And so I started looking, mm-hmm, at my own stuff, and it's like, oh man, like, I've got to surrender some of this stuff too,
mm-hmm,
because I'm in a season of life where I want to love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength, and I'm doing the best I can, but my bank account and my calendar might reveal that I could be doing better. And perfect. So just grateful for my parents for modeling that. Grateful for the conviction of the Holy Spirit that says, hey, we could be doing better. So let's get there.
Yeah. Adam, anybody jump out to you when you think of resources, just blessing other people, seeing it as kind of God's resources that funnel through them?
Yeah, I mean, all kinds of people that I won't name, just because they would be really...
They would hate it, yeah.
Get mad at me, you know, but yeah. They're all, and, you know, being able to be here at Corinth for almost 18 years now, have time and time again, just been able to come across people, so many people who just... had one just this past week, you know, just something that just kind of blew my mind. And so it's just, all the time, see it all the time.
I would agree. Haven't been here as long as you, but it's, I don't know, 15 years, I think. Mm-hmm. And I would say the generosity here from so many people is phenomenal. And I love that.
Well, I would even say, y'all have been here, Josh, you say 15. And Adam, longer than that, I haven't even been here four. Like, I'm getting close to four. And I agree. Like, and just, it took me 6 months to a year to realize, oh my goodness, there is something about this place.
Yeah.
And the generosity of the people. And I just, man, I'm so encouraged by that on a regular basis.
Yeah. So hear us say thank you to so many listeners and others who have, you know, blessed us with things, and man, keep it up because you're doing great work. And keep it up. Some of the rhythms are important, and Adam, that's some language we use at Corinth a lot. Whether it's, you know, recreational rhythm, taking care of your body and your soul, relational, getting in the right circles, but you focused and the sermon really on one big rhythm, and it was the church rhythm. It was the worship rhythm. Let's think about our kind of dads right now, or husbands right now, or wives right now, moms right now. Why is this specific rhythm the one that you talked about? Why is it so important?
Well, in that specific circle, it's because what you model is what will be passed along to your kids. And so if you are a mom and a dad and you're saying, you know what, my hope for my kid is that they will end up becoming somebody who is a Christ follower, who is going to, you know, be active in church and those things, then the way that you model that now in their life will have a massive impact on that. And, you know, we went through the stats and all those other kind of things. And I would just point this out, you know, as I look at those stats, it's like none of them are 100%.
No, none of them are.
So there is no guarantee, you know. And so, you know, the proverb, you know, train a child in the way they should go, whenever they are older, they won't depart from it, you know, is a principle, as we've said in here. It's not necessarily a promise, but it is something that we can cling to and we can go to as moms and dads and just go be okay. This is my goal. This is my goal. This is my goal. It's not 100% assurance. Mm-hmm. It's not 100% money back guarantee. But the fact of the matter is, if you want to increase your odds, you know, to mitigate risk, if you will, then your modeling of it matters more than anything.
Yeah.
And that's probably, I would say, the single most important factor in whether or not a child ends up staying in church. And Luke, I know in your world, this is one of those things that you're constantly getting new information and data points and all those other kind of things. And so I think that you'd be able to even speak even stronger.
Let me come in at kind of a youth ministry angle for a minute on this. And, you know, you've got those statistics. One of the things that's really important to me and the way that we've kind of tried to design things here at Corinth on Sunday mornings for students, 6th through 12th graders, I am convinced that one of the best things for middle and high school students to be a part of is worship with the entire congregation. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of reasons behind that. But for those of you who are listening that are parents, I just want you to think about this for a second. When you are in church and you are standing up with the congregation and worshiping and taking communion and listening to the gospel, that is the most spiritual thing that your student will see you do on a weekly basis. You might do some spiritual things in the home. You might pray together as a family. You might, you know, as Josh likes to say, get caught, you know, reading the Bible, all that sort of stuff. And those are great. And we hope that those are a part of your rhythms. But by far the most spiritual thing that your student, your kid will see you do is worship on a Sunday. And so, you know, I encourage and say to parents all of the time, do not rob your 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grader the opportunity to watch you worship. So I would just say that this is the reason that we stopped doing high school Sunday school on Sunday mornings.
Mm-hmm.
This is the reason we encourage a lot of the middle schoolers to attend the worship service instead of the Bible study, and then the Bible study kind of in addition to if they're going to be here for an extra hour. That's the reason. And the really the other reason too is because there was some study done. You know, there's the stat that a lot of Christian kids between the ages of 18 and 22 are abandoning the faith, and they found three things that help students stick with Jesus kind of in those ranges. So basically three things churches can do right now in students' lives that will prepare them for a lifetime discipleship of Jesus. And the three things are connection to an adult mentor. That's why we do small groups at Connect.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's finding a place to serve, which is why, you know, here at Corinth, you'll see teenagers greeting you and serving in all sorts of different ministries. But then the third one is worship with the entire congregation.
Yeah.
So that whenever they graduate from the youth ministry, they already feel like they're a part of something bigger than just that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is that all to say with this church rhythm in regards to this conversation? First thing is, if you want your kids to walk in the faith, you've got to demonstrate it. You've got to get here.
Mm-hmm.
But then the second thing is, let them see you get here, and don't rob them of the opportunity to watch you do something really, really spiritual.
Yeah, and so I'll just tack onto that too. I remember a couple of years ago, we asked a lot of people. These are you know, adults, so whether you're a mom or a dad, doesn't necessarily even matter. This is just, are you a person? What makes Corinth your church? Like, what makes Corinth a great place to be? What makes it a great part of your life? And far and away, the answer was when I plugged into Serve, and when I got kind of on a team where we're making a difference in people's lives. Yeah. You know, that's what was sticky. And so Luke, some of that research for teens is absolutely true. But it doesn't necessarily change once you aren't a teenager anymore.
Correct.
So you want some thriving in your life, jump into a team and serve. And if you do have a teenage student or an elementary student, I mean, what a cool opportunity to serve together or serve at the same time and kind of incorporate those rhythms for the whole family. So anyway, that's not the only rhythm we need, but it's a huge one. Church, as a community, as a family. All that's so important. I remember when our first daughter was born, my wife was very adamant that we were going to be at church the very first Sunday. And so we walked in. This is not like to brag or say we're better or anything like that. We're not. It was her that wanted to do this. 4 days old, little Naya's in the carrier. And I remember that. That stuck out to me.
Yep.
And I'm grateful for her, my wife, for her leadership. And just saying, this is going to be a priority in our life.
Yeah,
she's modeled that well for our kids. So love God, love others is kind of the other side of that coin. You know, Adam, you said it's the bonus question, but it's also in some ways just the proof in the pudding of, do you actually love God? It's how are you loving the people around you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's in 1 John, right? 1 John, anyone who claims to love God but hates their brother is a liar.
It's a liar, yeah. And so you said something that stuck out to me. You said, you and I can keep the second greatest commandment only if we keep the great commandment. If God is not in his rightful place, guess who we insert in his place? You look at them every day in the mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about that, just where that kind of came from, and then kind of how can we practically look in the mirror every day and not see ourselves as God?
Yeah. And I think that that's, you know, just the big idea there is that once God is in his place, then that's what allows us to be able to love other people. But there's also the other side of the coin, is that the way that we love other people is what is the proof in the pudding of how well we love God. And I think that's why what Jesus does is so genius, of, you know, being able to tie those things together. And I think that's why he didn't give the teacher of the law just one answer,
mm-hmm.
you know, because what we tend to do is we're loophole people.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he just says, well, just love God, it's like, awesome. I will love God. I'll give, I'll go to church. I'll do these things. It's amazing. And I am going to treat everybody around me like they're dirt and second-class citizens and be able to go, yeah, but I love God.
Well, it's the story of the Good Samaritan.
It's the story of the Good Samaritan. You know? But he's
trying to justify himself, saying, well, who is my neighbor?
Yeah, but it's also the flip side. And I see people do this as well, to where it's like, you know, I'm just going to be nice to people. I'm going to be kind. I'm going to be caring. I'm going to love. I'm going to help. I'm going to serve and do all these other things. But I'm not going to be devoted. I'm not going to obey. I'm not going to do these things. And so what Jesus does is he does just the brilliant thing. Surprise, surprise. Not the greatest teacher who ever lived was able to do something brilliant. But he ties those two things together because he knows that we're loophole people. And
like
so
that.
He closes the loophole and says, you've got to love God with everything you have. Okay, great. But you've also got to love the people that he puts around you, because you can't be okay with God and not okay with his people. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to be okay with God whenever you're not doing what he wants you to do as well. So I just thought that was just a great thing that Jesus did there.
Yeah. You also said, we almost always know how to answer the question, how should I love my neighbor?
Right.
But the hard part is doing it. So, so Luke, I'll start with you this time. Why do you think it's so difficult to, Nike it, just do it? Why is that so difficult? Like, we know, we see that person, we know we should help them or talk to them, or we know what we should do with the person at the store, or with our sister or our mom or our dad, our teacher. Why don't we do it?
I would say just super simple, and then I'll kind of explain, because people stink and I'm selfish. Right?
So you're not wrong, yeah.
So what it gets down to, though, is exactly what Adam's talking about. It's the other side of the coin of loving God. And we know how to love other people, but whenever we get put in situations to where we can actually act it out, we go back to the garden and we choose our own convenience over the inconvenience of serving someone. And it is this, okay, whenever we in real time get a moment in the day where we get to choose whether or not we're going to do something for someone and demonstrate love for them, or put a head down and go the other way, we literally are choosing our way or God's way in that moment. And so it really is, you've got to make sure that, you know, you are seeing people as an opportunity to love God, right? So so you are seeing people as an opportunity to demonstrate your love for God, to demonstrate to God your love for him and for his people. But we don't do it because we're too busy. We don't do it because we don't like to be inconvenienced. We don't do it because we don't like to be interrupted. We don't do it because we're uncomfortable of where it might lead. We don't do it because we're not confident in our own abilities, should it lead to something that is kind of outside of our comfort zone. There's all sorts of reasons we don't do it.
Yeah.
But it boils down to the real reason behind why we don't do it is because, again, we're choosing our own plan over God's own plan. And so we know how to do it, but when the moment actually gets there, it's more difficult.
Yeah. Adam, what do you think on that? What gets in the way? Why do you think it's so difficult to just go do it?
Two real quick thoughts. One, and Luke, you touched on this. I think that what makes it so difficult is just people are annoying.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
people are messy. People like a few weeks ago.
Yeah. People are messy. They're annoying. They're annoying at the store. They're annoying at work. They're annoying at the ball field. They're annoying in their car. You know, it's the way they talk, the way they act, the way they breathe, you know, all these kind of things. And it's easy just to get annoyed. And so I think that just kind of stands in the way. And yet Jesus looks at us and says, well, love them anyway, because last time I checked, you're annoying too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one side of it. And then I think there's another thing too. And it's just called the fundamental attribution error, which is just a term that means we tend to excuse what we condemn in others. And we condemn others what we excuse in ourselves, meaning that whenever I see somebody snap at their kid, it's like, man, that guy's a terrible dad. Mm-hmm. Holy cow. I cannot believe anybody would talk to their child like that out in public. Oh my goodness. They should just like, you know, he should lose his dad license. But whenever I snap at my kid, it's, well, it's been a long day at work. And, or, you know, I didn't get a really great night's sleep last night. And I was hungry.
Or they did something.
Or
so
they did something
you
that
don't
they
don't know what else they've said today.
Exactly.
Next week, right.
And yeah. So I think that that's part of it as well, is just that we tend to be very, very harsh on other people, mm-hmm. Because we're not hard on ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it really difficult to go, okay, what would loving my neighbor look like? What would loving this person look like? Well, maybe it means that I would pay for their medical bill, or mm-hmm. I would go smaller. You know, I would pay for their lunch, or I would, you know, buy a bag of groceries. And what we do is like, yeah, but why are they in that situation in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they would have planned
people.
Yeah. If they would have planned better.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
If they would have planned better, they wouldn't have been hit by this, you know, medical bill, or, you know, they would have had groceries already in place right now. And so we do that and we just blame them. And I think, you know, through the, so what's interesting is, so in Luke, this conversation Jesus has of the two greatest commandments is followed up by the Good Samaritan.
Correct.
So that is the context of this.
Yeah.
And so you can almost hear the excuses of the two guys, it is two guys, right? Who walk by and don't help. Of yeah. like, you know, it's like, well, if this guy wouldn't have walked on that road, this probably wouldn't have happened, mm-hmm. you know, or, and it's the busy thing and all those other things. But
yeah.
I think that there's just something that we do to where we justify ourselves and yeah. we condemn
and
others.
And I think too, if we want to take that story and go with it, I think it's just kind of a natural instinct within us to protect ourselves,
mm-hmm.
right? So you think about the priest and the Levite.
They didn't want to
be unclean.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to go mess with the person who would have made them unclean,
mm-hmm.
Even though they should have. We do a lot of the same things.
Well,
we want to protect ourselves, and putting ourselves in a position to help somebody else might lead us to a place that makes us a little
bit. Well, and if you go to that story too, what are they doing? They're saying, I'm going to choose to obey a rule.
Uh-huh.
Over helping this person.
Yeah.
You know, and so they're saying, I'm just going to go through the rule here and ignore the person. And that's why Jesus couples those things
yeah.
together.
I think that's yeah. good.
Hey, here's sort of maybe a life hack for just what might be in the way. I think it goes back, my thoughts, or it might go back to, you know, Adam, what you're saying, God's holding out on me. So mm-hmm. if I serve someone else, that's going to take too much time out of my day. I'm not going to get my stuff accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
But study after study has just continued to prove that the happiest people are actually the most helpful people. They're the ones that do serve others in one way, shape, or form. So
yep.
maybe you're not even at the point where you can trust God yet, but let's just trust the science behind serving other people is actually going to give you a better life. So, I mean, I believe in God, though, which is why your bottom line said winning with God, Adam, is how you win at life.
Yep.
And once again, we went back to Genesis
yep.
1, 2, 3, the beginning of time. Life was started by God, and he said, I gave you life. You want to win at that life.
Here's how to do it.
Here's how to do it, yeah. Yep. So, love that. The challenge was kind of fun. Focus on the you besides you.
Yeah,
I like that. So, let's just shoot a few practical ideas out here. How can you focus on the you besides you?
I think one of the simplest things that we can do is listen well.
Yeah.
So often we listen with the intention to respond. And we would be, if we want to focus on the you besides us, you know, the one that's right in front of me, it's what if I listened to just try to understand?
Mm-hmm.
That's a simple gift that we can give to people.
Yeah. My mind is going to just, again, the coupling of the two, what it looks like to love God and love others at the same time. You're never going to be able to focus on the you besides you unless you really are loving God well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking back to kind of those rhythms. This is just a really practical challenge that you can do next Sunday. Show up to church 15 minutes early.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Like, seriously, don't mm-hmm. just, like, if you've got kids, I know it's hard to, well, I don't know because
you don't know, yeah.
But I imagine like it's difficult to get them all dressed and fed and out the door.
And to be fair, I don't either. I never had to do it. Like my wife did it all.
Sometimes it's hard to kind of roll out of bed, all that sort of stuff. But there's a huge difference in your activity and in your love for God than rolling in a couple of minutes late, leaving a couple of minutes early, than getting there 15 minutes early, staying 15 minutes late. Because, I mean, we say it from stage every Sunday with the connection card. We really do believe that when you walk into that environment that you can encounter the presence of God and that he's got something for you. So get there 15 minutes early.
Yeah.
Find a seat, sit down, journal, be reflective, and then prepare yourself to go before the throne of God. You might find some help in that. And that rhythm that you create might actually help you in the way that you can focus on others besides you as well. So I don't know. That's just a practical challenge. Show it, this week, can you show up 15 minutes early?
Yeah. I like that. Yeah.
Like if you go to the 9:30 service on your calendar, put that. It starts at 9:15. Like, and if you go to the 11 o'clock service, it starts at 10:45. Get there at that time.
That's cool. Here's my idea. I'm going to challenge you to pre-decide that you're going to be nice to somebody, even though they're annoying. Because stop being surprised that people are annoying. We are all annoying. And so why does it surprise us that somebody is tired or somebody is short-tempered or somebody has a bad day? Like, just pre-decide, I'm not going to react. I'm going to respond. Like, choose that response already. Be prepared to help people, whether it's a kid, a coworker, a boss, somebody at the store. Just pre-decide and go do it.
Yeah. So, it's good.
Cool. How to win with God. Good stuff. And we got one more week in this series, How to Win Within, I believe, is the title. So we're looking forward to that next week. But before we do that, I want to ask you guys, you think you can win a race with each other? Each question is a race.
I don't think both of us can win.
Yeah.
No. But so we're going to race to the answers.
Everybody's a winner, then nobody's a winner.
That's right.
Correct.
Everybody gets a blue ribbon participation prize today. No, so I have some sports trivia. We all like sports here. We're going to see how much you actually know. When you know it, shout it out. We'll end today with just a little bit of fun. All right. You ready?
Let's go.
Okay, what do the rings in the Olympics represent?
Like what each five of them represent?
What do they represent?
I have no idea.
I think it's like the different continents
the
or
continents
something.
Of the world, seven, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Is there seven?
There's only five.
Does Antarctica get one?
No.
No.
No?
Okay, what is the diameter of a basketball hoop?
Oh, gosh, the hoop.
Well, the ball is 29.5. I'm going to say 36. Inches.
All right, I'll go.
I don't think it's not 29 diameter. That's going to be the circumference.
The circumference is 28.5.
I mean, 29, that would be a basketball. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we're going diameter?
Diameter, help me out. Diameter is the...
It's the straight line across.
Straight line across the circle is diameter. So we're doing math today, too. Right.
So it's not from the edge of the circle to the middle.
You're on the right track there, Adam. He's holding up his arm.
It's probably 16 inches.
18 inches.
Ah, that was going to be my other one.
Yeah. All right, we're going bowling next. What do you call it when a bowler makes three strikes?
Turkey.
Turkey. There it is. All right. And speaking of three, the Triple Crown is the award.
Batting average, home runs, and RBI.
No. It's the
Triple Crown.
Preakness, Derby,
and the...
One in New York.
This is the one in New York.
Belmont.
Okay, here we go. Long question. In the 1971 Olympics, Nadia Comaneci was the 71? First gymnast to score a perfect score. What country was she representing?
Well, that's Russia.
Russia.
No?
USA.
I think it's Romania.
Romania. Okay.
To be honest,
that'd be the 72 Olympics too.
Sure. Yes. I wrote that wrong. You have to look that one up because I forgot to copy the answer. All right. You should know this one. Who has won more tennis Grand Slam titles, Venus or Serena?
Serena.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Adam, you have the advantage on this one perhaps because of your age.
Oh.
Which boxer fought against Muhammad Ali and won?
George Foreman did.
I think you're right.
I know George Foreman did.
Maybe
Joe
Leonard.
But then Smoking Joe Frazier did too.
Yeah.
But
all right.
Sugar Ray. Which was it? Ever Sugar Ray Leonard?
No.
Joe Frazier. Now
that's a different weight class.
How long's a marathon?
26.2 miles.
26.2. In what game is love a score?
Tennis.
Tennis.
Yep. All right. Last question. Which sport uses a shuttlecock?
Oh, that is a badminton.
Badminton. Oh. And I learned this. Did you know badminton is spelled B-A-D-M-I-N-T-O-N, badminton?
Minton.
No, I would have done that. Double T-O-N.
I've spelled it wrong my whole life.
I would have spelled it wrong. Yep.
So there you go. We're happy. We're hopefully helpful today. Hope
Adam, Adam won at that, just in case we need to do it.
I didn't keep score, but I'm pretty sure he did win most of the races, or more than you did at least.
Yes.
Yeah. That's okay. You'll get your blue ribbon here in just a minute for participating.
No. I refuse participation trophies.
No, I'm just joking too. Hey, it's been fun. Thanks for tuning in as always. We hope you have a great week. We're excited for next week. We'll wrap up how to win, and we will be back in your car next Monday. Until then, we love you. We like you. Have a great day.